Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us at this first India-US strategic dialogue. On behalf of the Foreign Policy Program at Brookings, which I have the honor to direct, my name is Martin Indyk, by the way, and our partners in this dialogue, the Federation of Indian Chambers of Commerce, I want to welcome you this morning to an exchange of views among Indian and American policy experts that will take place on an annual basis, alternating between Washington and New Delhi. The United States and India are old friends, but relatively new strategic partners. Nevertheless, this partnership has a solid foundation of shared democratic values and our common economic and security interests. And as the world leaves the Cold War era behind and a new global order begins to take shape, the United States and India have every reason to cooperate in ensuring that it is a more peaceful, stable, secure, prosperous, and sustainable order for the benefit of their two peoples and for all mankind. The official dialogue is proceeding. As you probably know, the United States government and the government of India held their first strategic dialogue on the official level, concluded it yesterday. But we thought that it would be useful to have a parallel dialogue amongst policy experts that would enable a free flow of discussion on a variety of issues between us, security and economic in particular. And that as the as our dialogue builds, to engage in the effort to establish a network and have policy experts and a zone of trust between them that will enable the exchange of views not always possible on the official level, with the candor not always possible on the official level. And so that is the purpose of today's kickoff event, and we will be taking this up in parallel, as I said, alternating between New Delhi and Washington as the years go on. Brookings has had a strong and abiding interest in India for many years. Our President Strobe Talbot, as Deputy Secretary of State, played an important role in building the relationship during the Clinton era. Steve Cohen, our preeminent expert on India, has been a long-time senior fellow at the Brookings Institution working on Indian issues. Later on today, we'll hear also from Eswar Prasad, one of the preeminent economic experts on India, who's in our Global Studies program. And, of course, Bruce Rydell is also actively engaged in Indian studies. It is in that context that we are very proud to be the partners of FICCI in putting this together. I will quickly introduce our speakers on this opening panel, and then we will have an opportunity to hear from them. But first I want to acknowledge and introduce Rajan Bharti Mittal, who is the Managing Director of Bharti Enterprises and the Group Lead Director of Bharti's Wholesale and Retail Business. He is one of the pioneers of New India's business world, and he has now assumed the leadership of one of its most dynamic business organizations, that is the Federation of Indian Chambers of Commerce. After he makes some introductory remarks, we are very honored to have the opportunity to hear from Undersecretary William Burns. He holds the highest rank in the Foreign Service, He became Undersecretary for Political Affairs, which is the highest career position in the State Department, in May of 2008. He has served as Ambassador in Russia, Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs, where he was my boss, Ambassador to Jordan, where I was his boss, since I was Assistant Secretary before he was, and Executive Secretary of the State Department, as well as Special Assistant to Secretaries Christopher and Madeleine Albright. He has, in short, a very distinguished career as America's premier diplomat, and he is one of the anchors of this U.S.-India official strategic dialogue. We're also very honored to welcome today the Foreign Secretary of the Indian Foreign Service, Nirupama Rao. She has served as, like Bill Burns, in a variety of diplomatic posts with great distinction for her country that include Washington and Moscow. She was here in Washington at the embassy at a difficult time in U.S.-India relations, and we are delighted to have her back in her counterpart position as the Indian anchor for the official dialogue as the Foreign Secretary of the Indian Foreign Affairs Department. I think that hear from both of them, unfortunately Bill Burns will have to leave us at 9:40 for a meeting at the White House, but Steve Cohen will then have an opportunity to moderate questions if there's time for that. If not, there will be plenty of time for your questions and discussions later on the other panels. So, Mr. Mittal, I welcome you to the podium.
Good morning. Thank you very much for that introduction. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, Foreign Secretary Rao, Mr. Bill Burns, my ambassadors earlier, Mr. Kal Sibbal, Lalit Man Singh, Mr. Gautam Adhikari, Mr. Ajay Shankar, ladies and gentlemen. It's indeed a great privilege and an honor for FICCI to be participating in this Track 2 dialogue, which is taking place for the first time here. In fact, I was speaking to my Secretary General Amit here. I said this dialogue actually should take place before the official dialogue takes place so that people like us can give a penny bit of advice, which may not be feasible, but probably that may be the right forum to do it. But I did understand from our foreign minister yesterday that the talks at the state government-to-government level has gone extremely well. In fact, I was there to hear the president speak. It was very encouraging that the India-U.S. relationship is being given this kind of trajectory and this kind of importance. Is this really a reinventing of the relationship? I have been following, as a young kid, as a young lad, India-American relationship, and we have seen enough of ups and downs that have taken place, at least in my lifetime, that I've seen. But today, as I stand here, I do appreciate and understand that this relationship of two large democracies is destined to do well. It is destined to go in a different trajectory. And I'm sure the leadership recognizes, sure enough, President Obama yesterday was very categoric. And I can tell you, as Dr. Manmohan Singh, our Prime Minister, is also very categoric, that this relationship is not only here to sustain, but the velocity in this relationship will be picked up as we go along. I'm going to touch upon a few of the economic issues really here. I'm sure the political issues are best left to the experts here. Where is India headed? If we saw a few years back, I always say India had its two independence, 1947, which was political, and 1991, which was the real economic independence that this country had. It's a 15-year-old opening of the business society, the liberalization. But these 15 years have been extremely dramatic. Indian markets today provide what is needed from countries like U.S., where technology, innovation, financial muscle, power that it has, it needs markets which can be stable, markets which have legal positions, and markets which are looking for innovation, markets which are trying to be inclusive in their growth. I had a telecom company. It's a 15-year-old telecom company, but the kind of inclusion that the little technology that is done to the bottom of the pyramid is to be seen in India. If my colleagues here and friends here who will be probably visiting India, you can see that how much the proliferation it has done. It has touched the small farmer on one end and the big business houses on the other end. Clearly, that tells you the power of innovation, how best it can be utilized, especially in countries like India, where the power to connect is through digital medium rather than probably hard roads. The power to connect that small common denominator who wants to be part of the growing economy is to be seen how we are managing that. The growth of the country has been stupendous. While we have seen around the world how economies have fared, how different time of crisis that we have seen, even including this country, India still stood as bedrock on in terms of the growth areas are concerned. Yet, it seeks technology. It seeks partnerships. In fact, this has been an area of discussion, and even last time when we were here in the private sector advisory group that I am also part of the member, we did speak to the officials here that the technology denial and the restriction on the entities in India is something, if you have to be strategic partners, which is not acceptable. India, which has shown not only there is a very responsible democracy, but it has shown that it has the best track record as far as technologies are concerned, as far as areas where I think such corporations are much needed. So I'm going to request officials here to take note of that, because the economic velocity will only happen when private companies, private enterprises come together on that. Clearly, the objective of this dialogue is also to enhance the economic cooperation. While I'm sure the political cooperation is at a very high level, the intention and the idea here is to showcase that India's economic strength, India's economic velocity, not only for India-US trade, but India could become one of the major allies, not only to promote in Asia, but even in the African continent. Indian companies today with robust balance sheets are not only looking internally, but they're also moving externally. There have been companies which have come and invested in U.S. Job creation has been done. People talk about here that what happens to the Indian outsourcing story. It's only one side probably that is being told. IBM, which is your leaders in IT and technology, is actually doing the reverse outsourcing as far as India is concerned. They look after most of the telecom companies in India on an outsource-based model. So just to see one side of that outsourcing is happening is not correct. The picture is that this relationship is a two-way street, both economically and I'm sure, quite sure, that it will be politically as well. As trade and investment increases, as relationship between the two countries increases, from days where the relationship between the two countries depended on probably a little lopsided, dependent on AIDS, today that relationship is turning into partnerships. That relationship needs to transcend to a next level and to a higher velocity. I'm quite sure the dialogue that is open today, which will be a regular dialogue as we do the India-US strategic dialogue at the government-to-government level, this will also happen on a yearly basis. I want to thank Brookings Institute to be partners with us, to allow FICCI to be a partner with them. FICCI is not only a chamber of commerce in India, but it is a think tank. It has about almost 200 economists where they become the change agent. They influence the policies. They speak about the relationship that are needed between the private enterprise. And today, the economic velocity is driven by the private enterprises no more than it is being done by the government to government. So as a representative of that, as a representative of the chamber, I assure you, my friends, both from U.S. and friends, Indian friends here who are in U.S., that you need to come. You need to look at the Indian growth story. You need to come and invest in that growth story. I want to thank Secretary Rao to be here, Mr. Bill Burns, and I want to thank our ambassadors who have been present here, and I want to thank the audience for being here. If there be any questions on the economic side, I'll be very glad to answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bill?
Sure. Good morning, and thank you very much for that kind introduction, and especially for organizing this important conference. It's a special honor to open this event with Foreign Secretary Rao, a superb professional and a friend and colleague for whom I have tremendous respect. Nirupama has endured a number of meetings with me over the past 2 weeks in Delhi and in Washington as we prepared for yesterday's successful launch of the first ever U.S.-India strategic dialogue, led by Secretary Clinton and Minister Krishna and joined by a number of cabinet-level representatives from both countries. We considered initiatives in areas that included education, energy, counterterrorism, defense, trade and investment, and agriculture. At the conclusion of yesterday's discussions, President Obama visited the State Department and announced that he will visit India in November, emphasizing that partnership with India is among his very highest priorities. There has probably never been so much governmental and non-governmental bandwidth devoted to the U.S.-India relationship, and the strategic dialogue was important, not just for the day of discussions that took place at the State Department, but the 3 days of intensive focused dialogue that took place between counterparts across Washington. More than anything else, the strategic dialogue is a reflection of how far our relationship has come in a very short time and how far it can go in the years ahead. The simple truth is that India's strength and progress on the world stage is deeply in the strategic interest of the United States. Soon to be the world's most populous country and already the world's largest democracy, India is now the world's second fastest growing economy and a central player in the G20. Never has there been a moment when India and America mattered more to one another, and never has there been a moment when partnership between India and America mattered more to the rest of the globe. As two of the world's leading democracies, we can help build a new global commons, an international system in which other democracies can flourish, human dignity is advanced, poverty is reduced, trade is expanded, our environment is preserved, violent extremists are marginalized, the spread of weapons of mass destruction is curbed, and new frontiers in science and technology are explored. That is the moment, and that is the promise that lies before us. So where do we go from here? How do two leaderships and two peoples with so many shared values and common concerns help shape a more secure, stable, democratic, and just international system within which India can complete its historic task of modernization and within which the United States can revitalize our economy and our society? How do we work together in Asia, whose rise and dynamism will have such a large impact on everything else that we do? Let me start with Asia, then move outward to the wider global setting, and finally offer a few thoughts on how America can contribute in the next phase of India's modernization. India's reemergence as an Asian power is becoming an increasingly important feature of the world's most dynamic region. Rapid economic growth has driven the expansion of India's strategic horizons as it seeks to secure the resources and markets needed to fuel its continued prosperity. It is very much in the American interest for India to build on this role in the years ahead, and it is no coincidence that other large Asia-Pacific democracies, Japan, Australia, and South Korea, are also engaging more closely with New Delhi and cooperating more systematically on security issues. We share with India an interest in regional stability and a geopolitical balance which maximizes opportunities for economic and human advancement while minimizing the risks of conflict and mistrust. Central to that positive vision is a healthy relationship between India and China. As India's National Security Advisor Shankar Menon noted wisely, our experience suggests that there is space in Asia and the world for both India and China to grow and develop, and for us to do so in a way that is mutually reinforcing if we both wish it. As India looks east, its role in its immediate neighborhood obviously remains crucial. We have complementary interests on the subcontinent, and the United States supports India's leadership in encouraging the emergence of a stable democratic government in Bangladesh, easing tensions in Nepal, and promoting peace and reconciliation in Sri Lanka. Neither of us intends to outsource South Asia policy to the other, but more often than not, our policy prescriptions converge. The United States welcomes recent steps by India and Pakistan toward constructive dialogue, including the planned meeting in Islamabad in July between Minister Krishna and Minister Qureshi. The President has welcomed Prime Minister Singh's willingness to take political risks in order to lessen tensions with Pakistan, and has promised that the United States will continue to support those efforts. None of us, least of all Indians and Pakistanis, can afford a resurgence of tensions between two nuclear-armed states, and none of us, least of all Indians and Pakistanis, can afford to see groups with global terrorist ambitions like Lashkar-e-Taiba continue unchecked. It is similarly vital that we make common cause in supporting a stable future for Afghanistan. During President Karzai's recent visit to Washington, President Obama reinforced a long-term American commitment to an Afghanistan that can defend itself and provide for its own people, and that cannot again become a platform for violent extremists. That is a hugely complicated task, and one that will not come to an end in July 2011. It will require strong contributions from many countries, including India, whose important development assistance to Afghanistan already totals over $1.3 billion. India's leadership and the potential for U.S.-Indian partnership extends well beyond Asia. India's role in promoting global security is growing. India is today one of the largest troop contributors to UN peacekeeping operations. The Indian Navy is a leading player in counter-piracy operations off the Horn of Africa, and it is a striking fact that the Indian military now holds more bilateral military exercises every year with the United States than any other nation. Expanded U.S.-Indian defense cooperation, unimaginable not so long ago, is a valuable means of supporting our shared interest in India's broadened international security role. Our stake in India's defense modernization is real and increasing, and defense trade has taken off since our 2005 framework agreement. Building on the success of the civil nuclear agreement, India is contributing constructively to global nonproliferation and nuclear security efforts. At the Nuclear Security Summit in Washington in April of this year, President Obama praised India's leadership in launching a regional nuclear security training center. India and the United States have both suffered devastating terrorist attacks, with the scars of 9/11 and 26/11 still fresh in both our societies. Since the horrific assault on Mumbai in November 2008, U.S.-Indian cooperation in counterterrorism has deepened rapidly in the interests of both our countries. Our strategic dialogue this week elevates India to the rank of our most important global partners, allowing us to discuss and coordinate policies of global import, including on the future shape of the international economic system and on what we can do together to promote human development in other parts of the world. Prime Minister Singh is one of President Obama's most valued partners in the G20, and the United States strongly supported the recent expansion of India's World Bank voting share. In addition to the regular dialogue we've begun on East Asia, we look forward to quiet, systematic exchanges on other regional issues, such as the Middle East and Africa, where we can benefit from each other's perspectives and each look for ways to contribute to peace and security. India's expanding global role will naturally make it an important part of any future consideration of reform of the United Nations Security Council. India's widening role and contributions in Asia and around the world obviously hinge on its ambitious modernization plans at home. The United States has both a profound interest in India's success and the capacity to contribute to that growth in ways that benefit us both. While the United States is already one of the largest foreign investors in India, much more is possible. India has announced over $1 trillion worth of new projects to build highways, airports, electrical power stations, and other desperately needed infrastructure, creating major potential opportunities for American firms that can drive job creation and innovation in both of our countries. More rapid Indian consideration of reforms including the easing of caps on investment in critical sectors, would also help, as Indian officials themselves have argued. So would more rapid movement by both of us toward a bilateral investment treaty. The private sector has been a trailblazer in bringing our free market democracies together, and a reinvigorated U.S.-India CEO forum, due to meet again in 3 weeks, can offer a very useful non-governmental perspective. Rapidly deepening commercial ties between our two countries are concentrated in the knowledge-driven high end of our economies and are critical to the global competitiveness of both U.S. and Indian companies. We can and we should transform our export control relationship, befitting the 21st century U.S.-India strategic partnership. That will open the door to historic new cooperation in space and a number of other areas for high-tech cooperation. In addition to expansion of trade and investment, U.S.-Indian partnerships in agriculture and clean energy could propel a second green revolution, chromatically linking two disparate but vital initiatives. In the agriculture segment of our strategic dialogue, we're already exploring innovative new technologies and techniques and cooperative advances in weather forecasting. Equally useful is our ongoing exploration of other forms of green cooperation, especially given the environmental impact of India's rapidly urbanizing population and rising energy consumption. New energy technologies can help India supplement coal with hydro, wind, solar, nuclear, and other clean, renewable power sources. Implementation of our civil nuclear agreement can be particularly valuable in this regard. U.S. companies are prepared to support the expansion of India's civilian nuclear infrastructure, with two reactor park sites already identified. As Prime Minister Singh argued publicly last week, it is deeply in India's self-interest for its parliament to enact liability legislation consistent with international standards so that it can attract the best foreign investors at the most competitive rates and build the role and capacity of its own companies. India's development of its greatest resource, its immensely talented people, is another focus of U.S.-Indian partnership. We are already working together to expand cooperation in health, where USAID continues to help our Indian partners eradicate polio and attack HIV/AIDS. Meanwhile, Indian doctors and researchers contribute every day to medical advances in many fields, benefiting both of us as well as the rest of the world. With half of its population under the age of 25, India's workforce will expand significantly over coming decades. But this youth bulge could quickly become a liability if only 10 million out of 220 million secondary school students go on to post-secondary education, as currently projected. American universities can help fill that gap if the Indian Parliament passes new legislation that would open doors to foreign universities setting up campuses in India. Let me conclude simply by reemphasizing the central transformational fact about our relations in the years ahead. India and the United States have reached the stage where our individual success at home and abroad depends upon our cooperation. That is what is different about our relationship today. That is the promise unlocked by the civilian nuclear agreement and all the advances of recent years. That is the big idea that can animate our partnership for decades to come. And that is the challenge before us, symbolized by the inauguration of the strategic dialogue: how to widen the arc of our cooperation, how to build systematic habits of collaboration, how to turn the transformational accomplishment of the civil nuclear accord into partnership across a much broader front. I have no illusions that this will be neat or easy. It will take a lot of time and a lot of effort. Differences will occur and doubts will linger. But at this extraordinary moment, we have leaderships who understand and respect one another, broad public and bipartisan support, a growing record of trust on which to build, and remarkable scope for partnership in Asia, in promoting global security and prosperity, and in India's historic modernization. If we get this moment right, Indians and Americans can have an enormously positive influence on each other's future and in the course of the new century unfolding before us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Secretary Burns. You've laid out for us a very rich, detailed and comprehensive menu for this partnership, extraordinary in its breadth and hopefully in the years to come in its depth as well. We'd be very interested to hear Secretary Rao.
Thank you, Ambassador Indyk. Mr. Mittal, Dr. Cohen, Bill, distinguished former colleagues who are present here, Foreign Secretary Sybil, Foreign Secretary Mansingh, Mr. Ajay Shankar, Amit Mitra, if I've left anybody out, please forgive me. Dear friends, there are a number of familiar faces in the audience here today. It's indeed an honor and a privilege for me to be present here with my esteemed colleague and friend, Bill Burns, at the first annual dialogue on India-U.S. strategic partnership jointly hosted by the Brookings Institution and FICCI. I believe that this decade has been a truly transformational one in the India-U.S. relationship. Many milestones have been crossed. And a year ago, when Secretary Clinton was in India, and after her discussions with our External Affairs Minister, Mr. Krishna, our two governments announced their decision to establish a strategic dialogue. And in November last year, Prime Minister Manmohan Singh came to Washington at the invitation of President Obama on the first state visit of the new U.S. administration. It was a very successful visit that yielded rich dividends in terms of cooperation between our two countries in many areas, underscoring the vitality and the relevance of our strategic partnership. And the recently released National Security Strategy of the United States has stressed the importance attached to comprehensive U.S. engagement with India, which it sees as a center of influence in the 21st century. Yesterday, we held the first round of our strategic dialogue. Both External Affairs Minister Mr. Krishna and Mrs. Clinton, Secretary of State Clinton, chaired this dialogue. The visit of President Obama to India in November this year will take our endeavor onward to greater heights. President Obama's gracious presence at the U.S.-India Strategic Dialogue reception at the State Department yesterday was an abiding affirmation of what he eloquently called the unprecedented partnership between our two countries. The transformation of our relationship has taken place against the backdrop of India's initiatives to reform its economy and the geopolitical changes in the post-Cold War world. To my mind, there are three main drivers that have led to this transformation. First, our shared values of democracy, pluralism, and tolerance, and respect for fundamental freedoms, which provide the underpinning of a durable relationship. Second, there is the reality of growing economic linkages and people-to-people contact. Over the last two decades, our businesses have formed strong and mutually beneficial partnerships. Mr. Mittal talked about cooperation touching the lives of ordinary people, about the power to connect and reaching out to the common denominator. I think that very eloquently expresses the nature of what we are doing in some areas of our partnership today. Our trade in goods and services has grown. It is broadly balanced. We have launched a new financial and economic partnership and have agreed on a new framework for promotion of trade and investment. These are all catalysts of closer ties. They build what Ambassador Indyk referred to as the zone of trust between our two countries. And third, there is an increasing convergence of interests on major global issues. The imperatives of a multipolar and interconnected world today set the stage for us to work together to address global challenges, whether it be the rising threat of terrorism and extremism, or ensuring a balanced, equitable, and sustainable development for all, energy security and food security for both our peoples and for the world at large. While the rapidity in the evolution of our bilateral relations with the United States has surprised some observers, there is today broad-based political support and public goodwill in India for a strategic relationship with the United States. We see the United States as a friend and as a valuable partner in our developmental efforts. Thus, even as we strengthen our ties in defense, in security, in counterterrorism, trade, and the economic sphere, areas of cooperation such as in agriculture, energy, environment, innovation, and education are also coming to define the structure of our strategic partnership. Bill referred to this in his remarks just now. The joint statement that we issued yesterday at the conclusion of the strategic dialogue reflects this growing partnership that not only encompasses our bilateral cooperation, but also charts a path for us to work together on regional and global issues. Again, to quote Ambassador Indyk, or was it Mr. Mittal, there is a sense of destiny about what we do in this partnership. While there are no major irritants in our relationship, we need to ensure, of course, that our partnership does not become hostage to regional dynamics and that we realize its full potential. Some months ago, at an address at the Woodrow Wilson Center, I had noted that the future of our relationship will depend not only on the momentum of our strategic dialogue and its outcome, but eventually on how our respective peoples perceive our cooperation as safeguarding their aspirations and sensitivities. We need to be mindful of this aspect. There is no doubt that India's democratic, pluralistic, and stable society, encompassing over 1 billion people, makes it unique and in many senses exceptional. And with a sister democracy, the United States, we share a strategic interest in fostering security and stability in a rapidly changing Asia. Even as the face of Asia, and indeed the world, changes with the rise of China and with India, we, India and the United States, must work together to engender an open, a balanced, equitable, and inclusive architecture of economic and security cooperation. In a related context, the question of reform of the UN Security Council and the expansion of its membership is an important item on the agenda of our dialogue as we seek U.S. support for India's case for permanent membership of the Security Council. In our neighborhood, we have a vision of enhanced South Asian cooperation for development. That vision is, however, challenged by violent extremism and terrorism, which originates in our region and finds sustenance and sanctuary there. The recent failed terrorist attempt at the Times Square in New York has again revealed the global reach of terrorist organizations. Whether it be the Lashkar-e-Taiba, the Jaish-e-Mohammed, the Al-Qaeda, or the Taliban, all these groups are driven by a similar ideology, an ideology that is opposed to freedom, to democracy, to development, and the peaceful resolution of differences. Our two countries, India and the United States, have a vital interest in defeating terrorism and in ensuring that its safe havens and breeding grounds cease to exist. In this context, our bilateral cooperation in counterterrorism is crucial. Our concerns in this area are shared, and our cooperation in information sharing and improving our infrastructure to resist and deal with terrorism is of great relevance. We are supportive of the U.S. efforts to fight terrorism in Afghanistan and to bring stability there. Indian assistance, amounting to over US$1.3 billion, has helped build vital civil infrastructure, develop human resources and capacity in the areas of education, health, agriculture, rural development, among many others, in Afghanistan. In this process, we have been guided by the needs of the Afghan people. The Indian Medical Mission in Afghanistan, for instance, has treated over 300,000 people there in 2009 alone. We stand by our development partnership with Afghanistan, despite repeated terrorist attacks on the Indian mission and our brave men and women who are working there to help transform the lives of ordinary Afghan citizens. Like the United States, India would like to see the emergence of a strong, a stable, and prosperous Afghanistan. We also believe that any reconciliation or reintegration effort there should include only those who abjure violence, renounce terrorism, and pledge to abide by the values of democracy and pluralism and the Afghan constitution. In the larger Asian context, both the United States and India have an interest in protecting the global commons, maritime, cyber, and space domains. The free flow of information and trade across these global commons is vital for both our economies. Our naval forces have been working with each other in ensuring the safety and the security of shipping lines, lanes of communication, including in the Gulf of Aden. We need to also create appropriate norms for cyberspace to ensure that the freedom and the anonymity provided by these pathways are not misused. Our space agencies have had fruitful cooperation in the past, and there is immense potential for the future. Defense cooperation, as Bill Burns just pointed out, has become an important strand in our strategic partnership. Today, our armed forces have regular interaction and conduct joint exercises. In fact, the Indian Armed Forces conduct more joint exercises with the United States Armed Forces than with any other country. We are increasingly also looking to partner with the U.S. as we modernize our armed forces with the latest technology and equipment. An important element in this regard would be progress on easing of U.S. export control restrictions as they apply to India. This would not only be a logical outcome of the civil nuclear initiative, but would also be a catalyst for promoting trade and cooperation in high technology, defense, and the space sectors. It would also be consonant with the nature of the strategic partnership that exists between us and the growing mutual trust and confidence that is an important driver in our relations today. Economics and trade, of course, constitute an important plank of our bilateral relations. For us, the United States remains a prime source of investment and an important trading partner. As we make efforts to increase investment in infrastructure and give a fresh impetus to the manufacturing sector, the importance of partnership with the United States is only going to increase. This mutually beneficial partnership, of course, creates jobs. It creates opportunities in both countries. There's also been a surge in Indian investment in the United States. On the global stage also, as members of the G20, we have worked closely together on formulating policy responses to deal with the global financial and economic crisis and to address the needs of balanced and sustainable development worldwide. Issues such as agriculture, energy, education, and health have a direct impact on the lives of ordinary people. Development has become an important focus of our strategic partnership. Agriculture remains an important sector of our economy. While we have become self-sufficient in food production, the rapid growth in agriculture is essential for increasing the incomes of our farmers and rural folk and achieving the objective of inclusive growth. In the 1960s, India and the United States had partnered to usher in the Green Revolution in India. The spirit that animated our cooperation and which resulted in the Green Revolution must be revived. It is our hope that we can work together to bring a second Green Revolution to India. Separately, India has also developed capabilities and expertise in agriculture, especially suited for a low capital intensive environment. There is immense scope for us to share our respective experiences and work together to address food security in third countries. And this was where I think the development of cooperation in Africa becomes particularly relevant. We have agreed to establish working groups in diverse areas relating to agriculture, which should help us to increase productivity and also contribute towards regional and global food security. Both our countries also face similar challenges of dependence on energy imports and fossil fuels, and we recognize, both of us, the importance of addressing the challenge of climate change. We have in India a long-term perspective plan on energy and an ambitious national action plan on climate change, which seeks to increase the share of clean and renewable energy in our energy mix, increase energy efficiency across the economy, and expand our forest cover. In November 2009, our Prime Minister and President Obama agreed to launch a clean energy and climate change initiative to advance cooperation in clean and renewable energy and energy efficiency. We are working together to ensure a speedy implementation of its various provisions, that is, of the MOU, including of establishing a joint research center. The conclusion of the historic and very important civil nuclear initiative with the United States in 2008 opened new vistas of cooperation between our two countries. We have finalized the arrangements and procedures relating to reprocessing, and it is our hope that we can move soon towards practical cooperation in the field of nuclear power. Education is another important area for our cooperation. It plays a vital role in empowering and transforming the lives of our people. The Government of India has therefore launched an ambitious program for reform and expansion of the education sector. It is our hope to partner and benefit from the excellent U.S. university system. The Singh Obama Knowledge Initiative, announced during our Prime Minister's visit, would be one important instrument for this purpose. Meanwhile, there are at least 100,000 students from India who study in U.S. universities today. The field of women's empowerment is another aspect of our strategic dialogue, and yesterday at our meeting, we were able to talk about recent developments in our dialogue on women's empowerment. The first, we had an interesting meeting on this subject here in Washington a few days ago. There is thus today a very broad canvas before us to strengthen our strategic partnership. This is a relationship which can be, as President Obama has said, one of the defining partnerships of the 21st century. There are no major issues on which our long-term interests do not converge. We may occasionally differ on the manner in which these shared objectives can be achieved. We need to weave all these various strands that I referred to and intensify the momentum of consolidating our cooperation. In this endeavor, we will certainly benefit from the valuable inputs from the Fickey-Brookings dialogue. I wish you success in your meeting today, and look forward to knowing more about the results of your deliberations. Thank you so much.
Go ahead. Thank you very much, Secretary Rao. Bill, I think you need... Oh, good. Steve.
Ambassador Burns has a meeting at the White House, I believe, and we'll have to leave very soon, but we can take a couple of questions. Let me abuse my privilege by asking Aziz Hanifa, who's back there. I think he's back there. Where's Aziz at? Aziz? Yeah. Aziz is the longest-serving correspondent dealing with South Asia in the United States. When I was in the State Department in 85, 87, he was on the beat. And since then, he's covered South Asia and India matters very carefully for India abroad. So Aziz, let you have the first question.
Ambassador Burns, I'm going to pepper you with a question that was asked of you a couple of days ago and also asked of Secretary Clinton. In terms of, there were a lot of indications and suggestions that the U.S. is indeed considers India a sort of central part of any United Nations reforms. Why is it that the U.S. can't go to bat for India in this regard? Since you talk about India being an indispensable partner, etc., is there a China factor here? Because there is also, I guess, sort of a Pakistani sensitivity. But on a broader level, is there a China factor here?
I'm so glad I stayed for the questions. I'm kidding. It's a very good question, Aziz. First, I would say there's only an India factor here. As Secretary Clinton made clear, from the perspective of the United States, as we look ahead to reform of the UN Security Council and the issue of expansion of permanent membership in the future, which is a very important issue, we clearly see India as a central player in that consideration. And everything that you've heard the President and the Secretary say about the importance we attach to partnership with India in the years ahead, I think, underscores that. So I'll disappoint you again and not have a new American policy to announce this morning, but I think I've underscored the significance not only of our partnership, but of our partnership as it applies to looking at ways in which we adjust the institutional architecture of the global community in the years ahead to reflect the rise of India, its increasing responsibilities, and how we can better work together to deal with a common set of challenges.
Kumar.
Kumar from Amnesty International. It goes to both of you. Thanks for the presentations. My question is Ambassador Holbrooke's assignments. Initially, when he was given the original assignment, it was Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India. And later it was dropped. It was said that it was because of India's unhappiness. Can you clarify, Ambassador Burns, is it because of India's pressure, or you felt that it's not necessary for Ambassador Holbrooke to have India as one of their team? Thank you.
Well, I'll let Nirupama address India's perspective on this. What I would stress is that we're enormously fortunate to have Richard Holbrooke leading our policy efforts on what is an enormously complicated and important set of issues connected to Afghanistan as well as to Pakistan. And as both Nirupama and I have stressed, this is an area in which the consultation and the discussion between the United States and India is extremely important because we do share a strong interest in progress and in stability in Afghanistan, as difficult as that's going to be to achieve. And it does require, I think, the continued contribution of India, which has been quite important there. And obviously, the question of Pakistan is also an extraordinarily important one for both of us. And President Obama, again last night, made clear our continued support for efforts to improve relations between India and Pakistan. And that's something that not only Richard Holbrooke, but all of the rest of us are engaged in looking at ways in which we can work closely together to support what we truly do believe are a shared set of concerns and interests.
Nirupama, would you like to respond? This is your opportunity to praise Ambassador Holbrooke.
I'm not going to do that. I completely endorse what Bill just said just now, and we certainly see much value in our dialogue with the United States on the issues of terrorism that concern our region and the unfolding situation in Afghanistan and the U.S.-AFPAC strategy as it plays out in Afghanistan and Pakistan. As far as the issues between India and Pakistan are concerned, and you've heard this from every government spokesman in India or spokeswoman in India before. The issues between India and Pakistan exist. They have to be resolved through dialogue between India and Pakistan. There are very real outstanding issues that pend resolution between our two countries. We have recently, our Prime Minister has taken the initiative to reach out to Pakistan and to offer to resume dialogue with Pakistan. As you know, the foreign ministers will meet in Islamabad on the 15th of July. We want to address the issue of the trust deficit in our relations with Pakistan and to look at how we can take this dialogue forward. There are very real concerns about terrorism emanating from the soil of Pakistan, which has been directed against India. This forms very much a part of the dialogue that we are conducting and hope to take forward with Pakistan.
Unfortunately, Ambassador Burns has to leave and Ambassador Rao has to leave, so we have to cut off questions at this point, but you have plenty of opportunity during the rest of the session. Although they've covered the ground so well, perhaps there's no need for another session. But I think we still have plenty to discuss, so let me thank both of you.